This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
For years, I was so fed up with shampoo, I just stopped washing my hair. I quit completely. I was so sick of poofy, frizzy, limp hair, distorting my natural oils. Until a few months ago, I found Modern Mammals, and it changed everything. And by the way, right now you can visit modernmammals.com and use code LSS for 10% off. So check that out. So look, I heard about this through the podcast, and before I agreed to advertise, they sent it to me and I was reluctant. But let me tell you, I should not have been. This stuff is absolutely magical. My hair felt better, smelled way better, and most importantly, looked better. And I know it will do the same for you as well. It doesn't have those hair-ruining chemicals like other products, and it doesn't leave any leftover residues. It works. Don't believe me? Go read their awesome reviews online as well. Go to modernmammals.com and use code LSS for 10% off. Again, that's modernmammals.com for 10% off with promo code LSS. Don't forget to use our promo code LSS so they know we sent you. Sinners, welcome to another episode of Lead Singer Syndrome. As always, I am your host, Shane Told, and this podcast is all about me talking to other lead singers about what it's like to be the front man, or front woman in this case, of a professional rock and roll band. So this is going up a little bit later than usual. I like to pride myself on not being late delivering these things to you very often, but occasionally something happens, and there's been computer problems I've had before, or some kind of problem with like finding an internet connection to upload the file, something like that. But this one is all on me, and I am very hungover from my friend's Super Bowl party last night, and what a game that was, man! I don't have a lot of rooting interest either way. Either the Patriots or the Atlanta Falcons, but I was kind of hoping for Brady and Belichick to pull it off, and that'd be a cool story, I guess. I don't hate Tom Brady like so many people do, so that game was wild. And my friend Chris, he got a keg of Elysian Space Dust, which is a very high alcohol beer, especially if you're trying to drink it like at a Super Bowl party. I think it's like 8.2%. Great beer, super fresh. Thank you, Chris, for the delicious beer. But the plan was, I'll watch the game and I'll go home and I'll record the intro to the podcast, and that'll be fine. I'll upload it. It'll be up like around midnight, 1 o'clock. Well, after 7 or 8 pints of 8% beer, I was in a way, and I actually posted on the Facebook group chat we have for the All Access Club, which I'm going to tell you all about in a few minutes. And I said, hey, I'm wasted. I don't know what to do. And they're like, do a drunk intro. But I sadly decided that was maybe not a good call. I did attempt it, and then I was just not even making any sense. And so I bailed on that. But I know I did do a drunk intro once before, so maybe we'll keep the drunk intros just to maybe once every year. If every other week I'm half in the bag doing these intros, I think that maybe I have to admit that I have a problem. So anyway, so it's a little late, but thank you very much for joining me. It's a great episode this week, one of my favorites. Another female guest, which I always love, Sherry Dupree Bemis of Isley, joins me. She's terrific. She actually did this from her car in her driveway to get away from her two toddlers, which is amazing. So she has been very, very busy with music, with being a mother, and there's so much cool stuff we talk about, including her marriage to the very, very amazingly talented Max Bemis of Say Anything. Before we get to that, I want to tell you about the All Access Club, and we have just passed The $2,000 a month threshold, which is actually super, super rad. That's what I've been looking to do for a while. And that money raised really does go a long way in helping the show keep going. And it's going to allow more and more things to happen. We're going to be able to do a Lead Singer Syndrome tour at some point. We're going to be able to bring in more and more guests, bigger guests. I'm going to be doing things like flying to festivals to talk to people. So thank you to everybody that's joined the All Access Club, because you really are helping this thing grow. Now, if you're wondering what it is, basically this show is free. It will always be free. Once a week, I will put out a podcast every Monday, and in this case, maybe Tuesday night. I don't know when this is coming out, but it will always be free. However, for some people, one episode a week is just not enough. And if you want more stuff, if you want bonus episodes with non-lead singers, if you want to hear more about me, hear about my story, I posted one for the VIPs last week about some of my musical upbringing, which people said they really liked. So that was fun. There's things like that going on. I do a monthly Q&A video where you can go on and ask me questions and I'll play some tunes. And we also have Lead Singer Syndrome merchandise, which just came out. It's very cheap, and the whole thing is it is just for the members and the people that really care. So if you're willing to pony up a monthly fee, which is as little as $6 a month, you have access to all the Lead Singer Syndrome merchandise. And of course, we're running contests all the time. You'll get access to the Facebook group, which is so much fun. Shout out to everybody on there. And there's other stuff like getting merch sent to you, you know, signed stuff, all this stuff. It's just stuff. How many times can I say stuff? Because there's a lot of stuff and it's great stuff. So check it out. The URL is leadsingersyndrome.com/allaccess. Go there. Just check it out. I'm not saying you have to sign up immediately. I just want you to go there and check it out and see if it's right for you. And thank you so much to everybody that has already signed up. Thanks again to everybody who listened last week as well. Great episode with Jack Grisham of TSOL. I really enjoyed that interview. Like I like to remind you guys, we got like 60-something episodes, so go back. You don't have to listen to them in order. Just listen to whatever ones you know you think. There's some, but I will say, some of the ones of some of the people you maybe haven't heard of, some of those episodes are probably the best ones. So go back, check it out. As always, I love to hear your feedback. Please make sure you're following us on Twitter. It's at Lead Singer Syn, S-Y-N. Instagram, which is at Lead Singer Syndrome. I'm on Snapchat with the douchiest handle in the world. It is Real Shane Told. What am I, Donald Trump? This is awful. I probably have to change that. But I am on Snapchat. And of course, old-fashioned email, leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. Feel free to get in touch. I love to hear from you. Well, thanks so much for listening to this. If anyone else is nursing a crazy hangover today, I feel your pain. I gotta say, man, the Monday after Super Bowl must be like the most taken off day of work. Because, you know, I used to feel like the Super Bowl was earlier. And it was like during the day, kind of. And then, you know, you'd kind of get out of there. You know, and now these games, they just go on and on and on. I mean, I know it was overtime. They go on and on and on. I guess the commercials, too. And it doesn't start till like, what, it's like 6:30 now. So I was pretty late, and I think that that's what I chalk it up to. Again, my apologies for this being late. But here it is, and it's a great one. With Sherry Dupree Bemis of Isley. Well, hey, Sherry, it's so good to have you on my show.
Thank you for having me. You said you're getting into
your car. Where are you going?
I'm going to sit in the driveway. It's just the quietest place, considering my two toddlers are inside right now. So.
Oh my God! Yeah, no, yeah. I know you've been very busy with. I mean, not just music lately, but having two daughters, right? And they're what?
Yeah.
Their birthdays are coming up next month, both of them, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, they're turning 4 and 2.
When are their birthdays? I have a February birthday myself.
Oh, really? What's yours?
Mine's the 13th.
Oh, cool. Yeah, well, my first daughter, Lucy, hers is the 11th, and then the other one, Coraline, is the 25th. So they're literally 2 years and 2 weeks apart.
That's funny, yeah. No, we have this thing in like, my band and, like, our band and crew and all our friends. The week of mid-February, like right around Valentine's Day, like, mm-hmm. all of our birthdays are. So mine's the 13th. Our guitar player, Josh, is the 10th. Our other guitar tech who worked for us for years is, like, he's also the 10th. We have another February 11th. So it's, like, birthday week. So it's just whenever we're on the road or whatever, it's always a good time.
You just got each other Valentine's and shared chocolates and sweet notes.
But it makes you wonder kind of like, I don't know if you believe in like horoscopes or, you know, any of that astrological stuff.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they do say that Aquarius has a certain personality.
Right.
You know, and then, you know, when we take our band, for example, it's like, is it just coincidence that we have all these musicians and people that love music all together
right?
that are all born the same week?
Know. It's true. Like, I mean, I don't really follow any of that stuff, but whenever people mention it to me, or like, I'll post a picture of my daughter and say something about, you know, something she did, and they're always like, oh, yeah, totally. It's because she's a, you know, what the da da, and they'll name her sign. And it's just like, I'm always like, whoa, that's actually really, really matches up with what you're saying.
Yeah, no, it is kind of crazy. No, well, that's going to be crazy. You know, you think about having birthdays like the same month, like with your kids, like maybe that's a good thing? You kind of like bang it out all at the same time? Or maybe
it's kind of nice. I mean, I don't know how long they're going to let me make them share a party. I mean, probably not. I probably don't have many years to kind of just milk that. But
no.
Hopefully, I mean, they get along so good. I'm hoping that they'll just be best friends and I can do it till they're like, you know, just don't want parties anymore. It's so much easier.
You never know, man. You never know. Yeah. I have a feeling, though, like I picture, you know, I have a few kids that have daughters that are around like 9 or 10 now, maybe.
Yeah.
And it's, oh man, it's like they have the full on, like the full blown, like princess parties and like,
oh God,
I think it's coming. So look out.
I'm not ready for big kids.
Well, I mean, it's been pretty crazy. Like, I guess to start off asking you things, mm-hmm. how has it been, like, the last, I guess now, you know, your daughter's turning 4. How has it been balancing just that, you know, being a mom and also being a musician, still mm-hmm. putting out records, touring? How has that been for you?
It's been, you know, just kind of learn as you go. I mean, we never really had a plan. You know, when my husband is in a band too. He's in a band called Same Thing. So they tour, you know, they tour tons too.
Right, sure.
So I don't know. We never were too stressed about it. We were like, you know, we want to have kids. Let's start having kids. And we just always kind of figured that we would figure it out. And so far we've just kind of figured it out. I think you have to have a certain personality type to even fathom the idea of touring in a band with children. Like, when I actually talk about it and think about it, I'm like, we sound like crazy people that we do this, but I don't know. We love what we do so much.
Yeah.
So we didn't ever want to stop doing it and change, you know, everything about who we were and our passions and what we loved. Whenever we started having kids, we just, you know, figured we would make them a part of it. Yeah, and it's been amazing. The kids, you know, I don't know, you know, when they get to a certain age, they might be like, you know, I'm tired of touring, I don't want this life, and, you know, and then we'll change our priorities and we'll work around, you know, obviously all of that if it happens. But so far, they just love it. They love, you know, we're home for big chunks of time, but then we get to go on the road and they're on this, you know, buses and bandwagons and seeing different cities, and we take them to parks and we do lots of fun stuff. So to them, it's like, you know, it's just what they know and they love it. So it's been, you know, it's definitely challenging. You know, it's not for the faint of heart, but it's fun, you know. I love it.
Well, it's funny how your 4-year-old's probably been to more places than most 40-year-old people.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Oh,
already.
Yeah. Well, no. I mean, she's been way more places than I had been at her age. You know,
for sure.
By the time I was even 13, she's been more places than I was. So anyway.
No, that's crazy. But just balancing that, I just imagine, you know, I know how it is. Obviously, I'm a, you know, a full-time touring guy as well.
Yeah.
So I know how much time there is in the day, really, just for me, just to like, you know, have my own personal time, you know, between, especially like if it's a headline tour and you've got sound check and you've got press and then, you know, you got maybe a meet and greet or like all these things you have to do, just having that time. I mean, do you bring, you must bring some kind of a babysitter like along with you for when you're.
Well, on the last tour, on the last few tours, I've always had at least like a sister or someone on tour with me who I could, you know, if I did have interviews or meet and greets and things like that, it just, you know, they would hang out with my sisters. But this will be the actually the first tour coming up that none of my sisters are actually touring with me. So, but it's going to work out where my husband is going to be off tour while we're on tour. So he's just going to come and kind of like, you know, if what if I have meet and greets and VIP stuff, he'll just watch the girls. And it's cool. We can all be together and, you know, daddy there. So
he's going to come hang. Yeah. I wonder if that's if for Max. And I know Max over the years. I've met him a few times and everything.
Yeah, of course.
It must be weird for him. And I guess this hasn't happened yet. But, I you know, I could see it being weird being like, okay, I'm going to go on tour. And I'm not going to actually have to play music or worry about that. I'm just going to be hanging out. Like, that must be kind of like rad.
He loves it. It was his idea. You know, I was going to hire someone to go with us. He was like, wait, no, what are we thinking? I will come. We can be together. And because we, like, the kind of family that we are, that's just, it's very important that we're together as much as possible. Like, he hates staying home, you know, when we go off on the road. And, you know, he hates it. He wants to be around us and the girls. And so he's excited about it. We're actually going to be, he will have to do some music because we're going to be recording on the road. We have a band together called Perma, which has only put out one record. Yeah. So we're going to be doing that, just kind of casually on the road recording it. So it should be interesting.
No, it's just really cool. And it's such a different thing. You know, I talk to most people and most people either don't have children or, you know, they don't incorporate it, you know, really into their touring life at all. But with you and your husband being so busy, that's just, that is super crazy. I mean, it's cool too. Like, I you know, obviously, Isley, you've been around a long time. I know all about your band and all about the history of it. And it's kind of cool now because it's almost like the family, the Dupree family is like growing, you know,
with
more girls. and that's another unique thing about you is just over, you know, your band's history, you've had so much of it has been to do with family, you know, and having sisters and cousins and everybody involved. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you just mentioned, you know, 2 years sisters aren't in the band anymore. Now how has that been changing members, you know, on the road and stuff for people that aren't like, you know, necessarily unconditionally loved like your family would be? Like, how has that dynamic changed on the road?
I mean, honestly, it's been way less of a thing than I thought it was going to be. You know, whenever, you know, my family kind of started coming to us and, you know, saying, you know what, like, I hate to do this and I love Isley and I just can't, you know, tour anymore. I have my family and my kids and I need to stay home, you know, because I have the lucky situation where my husband's in a band, so we can work it out to where we can, you know, he can come on the road with me and he doesn't have, you know, have to stay here in Tyler and, you know, go to a specific job. So it really works for us. So whenever, you know, everyone started coming and I can't do this anymore, it was very like kind of devastating emotionally, just because I loved so much, you know, what we had, and so did everyone. But I never even had the thought that I wanted to stop doing it, you know. So I was just
right.
They were, you know, everyone was very supportive and they were like, you know, keep doing it, you can do it, just. And so it really took a lot of encouragement from them to tell me, you can keep doing this, you know, you can do this without us, you know, it'll be great, you don't have to stop. So once I kind of wrapped my mind around that, everything just started falling into place, you know. I had a lot of help, and you know, my cousin Garen, who's been playing with us, you know, basically since the beginning, is, you know, he's like my brother. So he wanted to just keep going for it, and he loves Isley. And then his brother was playing drums for us, touring with us now. And so it's still very, feels very much, you know, the same, you know, it feels like Isley. And the people that we bring on tour with us to fill in with, you know, keys and other guitar and stuff, they've become like family. 'Cause we just, have been so lucky to find this group of people who are just very warm, like beautiful people, and it's, they love the kids and they love the whole environment, and they really understand it and they get behind it. So it has been, I feel very lucky, because, you know, it could have just, you know, disappeared and just crumbled, but, you know, we were able to, you know, sustain it, and I'm so happy and so, you know, I feel like more passionate about it than I have even felt in years, because it's just been, once you are faced with losing something that's so precious to you, you're like, oh no, like, whoa. And you realize how much even more it means to you. And whenever you're given the chance to keep doing it, you know, you really, you don't take it for granted at all.
Absolutely. Well, it's also interesting too. I this kind of just made me think of a conversation I had with Spencer from Under Oath. Mm-hmm. And he talked about how, you know, early on in the band, they felt like, you know, they were the same kind of guys. They grew up with, you know, conservative families in Florida. They went on tour together. They were together all the time. And Spencer basically called it like, we were all kind of like the same dude. And then as we got older, we started to find our own identities. Mm-hmm. And I guess that must have been what happened with you and your sisters and your cousin as well, you know, and your family members. Just like, you're like, you wake up one day and it's like, well, wait, I don't need to be the same as her. That doesn't mean I love her any less. It just means our paths are different.
It's so true. I think everyone just, you know, since we're siblings, you know, which is like this crazy bond, and we grew up writing music together, and we just basically learned how to do what we do together. So I think it was really hard for everyone to even understand why they were kind of feeling, you know, kind of feeling less into it even. I think there was a lot of guilt involved with the people who started having those feelings. And finally, you know, we all just talked about it, and they're like, yeah, I think I just, it's really not my dream anymore.
Sure.
And it makes sense. Like, who would expect, you know, who would expect 4 or 5 kids to, you know, have the same dream their whole lives? That's not really a reality. I mean, so.
No.
Yeah.
No, I'm lucky in my band that we've had the same, you know, well, 4 out of 5 members of the entire band, because we all are on the same page. We all are basically the same dude. So, hey, whatever. But let's talk about how this whole thing just started. Like, you know, you talk about growing up with your sisters and everything. You know, I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with the story, and you've probably told it a million times, but I'm sure some of the listeners are not. Mm-hmm. So I'd love to just hear about what your upbringing was like, how you became such a musical family, and obviously your parents must have been like wicked supportive. So you know, can we start there? I'd love to hear kind of the story about just how you got involved loving music and then eventually playing music and playing music professionally. It's really cool.
Yeah. It was a very natural kind of slow progression. I mean, my family, we're very close, grew up in kind of this small town, kind of on the outskirts of a small town. So, you know, we didn't even live in town, and we were homeschooled.
Suburb of a suburb.
And we're all homeschooled. So, you know, we had a lot of time just together as a family and a lot of free time to, kind of figure out what it was that made us tick, you know, personally and what we loved. And our parents, they, you know, weren't like very, you know, super musical. My mom, they both sing. They're always singing with us, teaching us how to pick out harmonies so there was some, you know, kind of casual coaching there, but just for fun, you know, because they loved it. My dad played drums in bands growing up in high school and stuff.
Well, that sounds pretty musical to me. Like, oh, my parents were that musical. Well, my dad played drums in bands in high school. Like, okay.
I guess you're right. I just mean no one did it even on at all a professional scale or did even real performances. But we had guitars around. We had instruments. Our dad, you know, taught us to play a few chords, and I just remember sitting down with my sister and with guitar, and we kind of realized, well, like, we can write our own songs. Like, this is a thing. This is amazing. This is possible. It just had never occurred to us before. You know, we're like 12.
So how old are you? Oh, you say you're 12, yeah.
So we just kept playing together and writing songs, and we would play in our local coffee houses. And you know what? We just started playing everywhere, playing in Dallas and the club scene there, and just kind of gathered attention from people. And then we started having labels interested and doing showcases. And, you know, it was very, you know, nothing ever we were pushing for. It wasn't like we were reaching out to labels and trying to get signed, you know, even though back then that was like, whoa, getting signed was like the big dream. And, you know, nowadays it's less so even necessary.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
But, yeah, we just did it because we loved it, and we would play music together, and it was so much fun, and our parents would drive us, you know, to these clubs in our Suburban, throw our little amps in the back of the car.
Right, so I guess with all the siblings and everything, you already had a big vehicle, so that wasn't a problem.
Yeah, it was easy. We had these great supportive parents who just, you know, loved to help us, and so, you know, from there, I just kind of, you know, went. We got signed
I want to talk about the signing thing because you know, nowadays, like you said, signing doesn't work the same way. And the first mm-hmm. label you were on was Warner Brothers. Is that correct?
Yes.
And so, I mean, that's a big thing. Like Warner Brothers, yeah. You know, you don't just like wake up one day and, hey, we're on Warner Brothers. So there must have been, especially back in those days, there was mm-hmm. probably a lot of money involved. I mean, especially like just compared to like what it is today. And there must have been like the A&R guys, like I just pictured like the douchiest guys flying over and telling you what you want to hear and taking you out to like the most expensive steakhouse. Is that how it works for you?
That was exactly how it was, you know. And it was funny because, like I said, we were just these kind of homeschool. I mean, we didn't really not like homeschooling is like you're an idiot. I loved homeschooling. It was like made it possible to do what we did. But just, you know, we had no real social interactions beyond like our church and our family, so
right.
You know, we had these people flying in and trying to wine and dine us, and it was exciting, you know, but for us it was very strange. And I think no one really knew what they were, I mean, obviously no one knew what they were doing in our band. Luckily we had, you know, parents who were looking out for us, and thankfully. But, you know, so we actually the guys who managed Coldplay at the time, I don't know if they still do, but they came to see us in Dallas and wanted to work with us. So then, you know, from there, we got on the Coldplay tour, which was, you know,
that was wild.
jumping up and down in our beds, you know, status. That was amazing. But, so yeah, the label thing, I don't know. You know, it was right towards the end when labels were kind of losing their grip and everything was going under. And so we kind of got in there right before all that happened, and it was, you know, it was good. It gave us a push, you know, and helped us kind of get our footing and keep doing what we wanted to do and kind of build our dream up, you know. But then it did crumble, and it was very weird and devastating and confusing, and, you know, we were scrambling, and, you know, but everyone was at that point.
Well,
you know?
the problem was that was not you or the band, it was the industry, you know.
Yeah, the industry just fell apart.
And either, you know, and with your band, I mean, Warner Brothers probably either needed you to be like the next Coldplay, I mean, at least success wise, or it was just never going to happen. So you know, the deck was kind of stacked against you.
Totally. It was weird.
Absolutely. Do you have any funny stories about those guys coming out from the record label? Like, I had kind of a funny story that I'll share with you about one of my old bands, and maybe you'll think of something.
I
was in this like kind of alt rock, radio rock band, which I wasn't really my passion, but I was sort of filling in on bass, and mm-hmm. I was in Silverstein at the time, actually, but we were just a local band, and Atlantic Records wanted to sign us. And they flew into Toronto and they took us to this steakhouse, and I'm a vegetarian, first of all. So, well, the other guys in my band weren't, but they didn't know. So I was like, oh, whatever, it's okay. So I like came along and I remember they brought out this like tray of meat, and they were holding the steaks up. Like they had them wrapped and they were like showing us the steaks. Like, I don't know why someone wants to see a raw steak, but hey, whatever. And they were like holding it like right beside my head. And anyways, the thing I remember most is we were dressed like, we were going to a nice place. So I don't remember. I was dressed like kind of nicer. Like I wasn't wearing like a ripped denim jacket with a back patch or anything, you know?
Exactly.
So I was wearing like a nicer shirt, and the A&R guy like rolled in, like he looked like borderline homeless, like what he was wearing. And he was wearing a baseball hat. in like a really nice restaurant. And apparently, I guess the waiter came over and said, excuse me, sir, there's been a request from another table for you to remove your cap.
Oh, my God.
And he goes, you can politely tell the person who requested it to fuck off. And he refused to take his baseball hat off. And I don't know. It was just like, it was one of those things where it was like,
you're like, what is happening? Where am I?
Yeah, because I mean, I hadn't dealt with any sort of rock star stuff at all. And I was like, okay, like, basically, you know, this is the lifestyle. You just do whatever you want and you just tell the world to fuck off. So I'm just like picturing that guy at your meeting when Isley's like trying to sign you guys as like, we were probably like teenagers.
There was definitely a few steakhouses involved, similar scenarios. What is it with steakhouses? Why do they think we all just want to go to steakhouses? How is that impressive?
Yeah, like
let's take them to a steakhouse.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, they did early on. I mean, that was one of the things, you know, the label. They would try to get us. I think they were hoping, they're like, oh, girls in a band. Like, you know, I think they were hoping we would be like a Hillary, because they wanted us to tour with Hillary Duff. That was one of the bands.
Oh.
They were kind of trying to get us in that world. And we straight up said no. We were like, we want to be like, you know, a band. We don't be like a, you know, at the time it was like pop. They want us to be like a poppy girl thing. I think that's probably what they saw when they came to see us. Like, oh, this is what I can make this. This will be money.
Yeah.
But, you know, we wanted to be like, you know, we wanted to be like musicians and, you know, have our career. And so, you know, they didn't like that. I think it was a mistake from the get go. We weren't what the label needed us to be for sure.
Yeah, well, I kind of look at your career and, you know, you mentioned that you toured with Coldplay, which, first of all, that must have been wild. Were they like really like still like, was it like an arena stadium tour when you did it? Was it that big at that point?
Yeah, I mean, they did, you know, they played Red Rocks and Madison Square Garden. And so,
yeah, oh my God, you played Red Rocks on like one of your first tours?
Yes. It was
you talk about being spoiled early.
I know. I mean, we were like kids in a candy store. They played, you know, the Hollywood Bowl and. It was nuts. Man. It was very nuts. They were very sweet at the time, you know, down to earth, very normal. It didn't feel, I mean, the venues were crazy, yes, but, you know, and it's like, oh my God, there's Chris Martin and you're such a fan, you know. So it was a little trippy, but it was an amazing experience, you know. I would love to do it now again, but I'll probably never have a chance, but it was fun. I appreciate it. I was there and it was really, you know, we never took it for granted. So, you know, I feel like I actually, when I was living it, I was appreciating it. So at least I could say that.
Of course. Yeah, of course. And but I guess my question related to that was, you know, you get on Warner Brothers Records, major label, mm-hmm. huge, and you have basically every opportunity, which I think in some ways is a huge blessing for a new band, but in some ways it's kind of a curse because then they're like, well, you should work with this producer and you should work with these songwriters and you should get, and then it's like everybody's trying to push you their way that they think, because first of all, there's a lot invested. And second of all, they just can, like they can. So why wouldn't you want the best?
They own you. Yeah.
Right. So how was that? Were they really hands on with saying like telling you what songs to write, telling you, what image to have, especially being, I imagine like with women, it's more important kind of, which I hate to say
exhausting.
That, but I think it's right.
It's true.
So I'm just wondering how that shook out, how that was with Warner Brothers.
I mean, it was just a weird, such a weird time. Like when I look back, I feel like it's such a blur and I can't even fully grasp what was happening in those years, just because it was so many ups and downs and there was so much pressure and it was just, ugh, it should have, of course, playing was fun. I mean, we did all these tours and that was amazing. That's what we wanted to do, but all the surrounding stuff and you know, the pushing with, you know, you can't record that song, it's not radio friendly, or you hear these songs are fine, but we need two more radio songs, and just the pressure to do that kind of stuff.
God,
it's yuck. It's not conducive to being creative. And you know, we're just not, I don't know. We were never that kind of band. We weren't ever going to be. So, you know, I mean, now, looking back, I feel proud of us because even though we were really young, since we knew who we were and where we were coming from and really had, you know, this family environment that really, you know, was just behind us. So there was no weird pressure from any of our family to do or to choose or to be anything other than what we were and what we knew we were. So, you know, we were very kind of from the beginning, like, you know, no, we're not going to do this. And yeah. That's not who we are. That's not what we want. And, you know, within reason, because like you said, there's a lot invested from the label and they're trying to support you, but they also have their own agenda. So it was, you know, it was stressful. And looking back, like I said, I feel proud of us, but I'm so much happier now. Oh my gosh. You know, and we were didn't have a label for a while, after the Warner Brothers thing happened, and kind of were just searching around just to have help, you know, from not a big label, just, you know, a label that would support us and help us and kind of meet goals and get out there, but not smother us and be weird.
Yeah, sure.
So when we found Equal Vision, I still feel so lucky that they are what we needed.
They're some of the best people.
They love the band. Yeah, they're the amazing people. And
I feel like I talk about Dan from Equal Vision like every week on the show. I don't know. Like, his name always comes up.
Yeah.
And he's one of my favorite people, despite, you know, my band never actually being on Equal Vision. Like,
right.
He's still a guy that's around, I talk to, and he's still a good friend.
They love music, and they know everything about all their bands, and they care so much. And so I don't know, whenever this is just, it's the best environment, you know, at least for us, because we have the support we need, but we also have creative freedom. Oh my gosh. They just give us complete creative freedom, and it's amazing.
Cool. No, that's
all I could ask for.
Right. That's the thing. Creative freedom is something like I've taken for granted, because I've never had a label tell me, like, we make the records and then we send them to the label and that's it.
Yeah.
There's no changes, you know?
Right.
But, you know, looking back, you said looking back a few times, like looking back at your legacy, at your discography, are there songs from those first, did you do two records or three records with Warner Brothers?
We did two official, well, yeah, we
okay.
did two.
Call it
we
two.
Did a third. Yeah, we did three, but they didn't, it was like, you know, our contract is up, so Equal
right.
Vision ended up putting
it's
it.
Not important.
So, yeah.
When you look at those, like, let's say, the first two records when they were really like hands on and telling you what to do. Do you look back at those records and be like, oh man, like I wish they didn't force us to write this song or like change this lyric or do you still feel like you kind of made it work and now the songs are what they are? Or are there kind of regrets where you're like, man, there was a version of that song like back in 2005 that was like way better and like way cooler.
Right. I mean, there's a mixture of all of the above. I think, you know, some of the songs were basically untouched and those I love, but there are, you know, maybe at least one per record where they were, you know, we were kind of forced to write something that was like catchy and radio friendly, quote unquote. Which those, you know, those are not my favorite songs, but
is there one in particular you can't stand?
Oh gosh. One of the songs I don't really care for is My Lovely. I think it's on Combinations.
Okay.
But I like the song. It's not like it's a bad song. It was one of the ones where they were like, go write a radio song. And, you know, it was funny. It never ended up on the radio, of course.
But, well, of course not. No.
Of course not. They never do. But, so when I hear the record, I always think of that. So I'm like, I wish I could have just written a song that was like actually from, you know, my gut and instead of just thinking about it so much when I wrote it.
Sure. No, absolutely. Absolutely. So we got to take a quick break to hear from our awesome sponsor, Loot Crate, but we will be right back with more from me and Sherry.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So we are lucky on this podcast to have a really, really cool sponsor that actually does something awesome. I'm glad I don't have to sell dishwasher detergent or anything like that. It really is awesome what Loot Crate is doing. I don't know why I said dishwasher detergent. That's random. I think because the Tide commercial... the Tide commercials were so good in the Super Bowl. There were some great ads. This ad will not be that good. But thank you very much for checking this out, because Loot Crate is really, really throwing us a bone, and they can throw you a bone too, because they have such a great service. If you're into nerdy stuff like me, if you're a geek, if you like pop culture, if you like cult movies, if you like retro video games, they have anime. They have gaming stuff. They actually have gaming stuff like where you know, for like new school gamers. I'm an old school guy, but they have new school gaming packages as well. They have all these different crates. And the best thing is they're less than $20 a month. You get 4 to 6 items, and the stuff they send is really, really cool. They've been sending it to me every month free of charge. Thank you, Loot Crate. That's very nice of you. But if they didn't, or if they one day stop, I'm definitely signing up, because it's just rad. And I just love some of the like little things they send. And, you know, I got this little Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles like ceramic shot glass, which, I mean, I would definitely pay like $10-$12 just for that alone, and it just came, you know, along with like this actual kind of sick like pin, like enamel pin, t-shirt, you know, all this stuff is always coming to me, and they really, really do a good job. So if you're on a quest for epic gear, housewares, and collectibles, Loot Crate offers an epic range of pop culture items for less than $20 a month. Whether you're shopping for the geek in your life or you are that geek, Loot Crate is the best surprise you know is coming. Every month, there's a different theme and new exclusive items you can only get with Loot Crate. Treat yourself every month or give the gift of geeking out to a friend or loved one. Oh, yeah. Okay, here we go. Oh, yeah. So here it is. This is what you want to hear. Roll up your sleeves and get ready to celebrate some of pop culture's most put together. See what they did there? Put together franchises. February's hands-on theme is Build and features Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. Never really got into the Power Rangers. Personally, but we got Batman. Obviously, Batman's awesome. Lego Dimensions. I love Lego so much. Oh my god! Anytime I have to buy a kid a present, I buy him Lego. It's my favorite. And the ultimate building video game, Tetris, which I'm a huge Dr. Mario guy. Tetris also awesome. I guarantee you could not beat me in either of those games. And as always, our monthly T-shirt and pin. Here's how Loot Crate works. Listen up. This is important. You have until February 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific, that's midnight Eastern, to subscribe and receive this month's crate. When that cutoff happens, that's it. It's over. So you got to get there soon before the 19th, or you're not going to get the sick Lego Batman Power Rangers. I'm sure people like the Power Rangers. Not my thing. It's okay. And Tetris. To get that stuff, you got to be there by the 19th. So head over to lootcrate.com/leadsinger and enter the promo code LEADSINGER to save $3 off any new subscription today. Again, the link is lootcrate.com/leadsinger and enter promo code LEADSINGER. So you're married to Max Bemis of Say Anything, who, mm-hmm. I mean, he has such a reputation, you know, I don't mean that in a bad way. He has this sort of, it's like if you asked somebody like a fan of his or somebody in the scene or whatever, not somebody like immersed in it. Oh, what do you think about Max Bemis? People are like, well, he's kind of crazy. He takes medication. He, you know, like he's this kind of tortured like genius, but he's this amazing songwriter. And you know what I mean? And there's like all these different sort of things that different brushes you can paint this guy with. But like, tell me what it really is like what he's really like to you and how it's been, obviously, like meeting him, what your thoughts were when you met him and how it's kind of how he really is now.
Mm-hmm. Well, definitely like all the things you said, I would not say aren't true about him. You know, I myself would use all those words to describe him. But we started talking. I'd been through a divorce, which was like just so shitty. My life was torn apart. And so I was, you know, kind of at this mindset where of just going, I don't want to talk to any, like, I don't want to meet a guy. I don't want to talk to a guy for however long it takes. If it's a year, 2 years, whatever, I don't care. I was just done. I was so done. And then he, out of the blue, emailed me to ask me to sing on this project with Chris Conley that he was doing called Two Tongues.
Sure.
And, you know, I was a fan of both their bands. I didn't, know much about them, or I didn't know anything about him, but it was just, I'm not even kidding, this sounds like a fairy tale, fucked up, stupid thing I'm saying, but whenever I got his first email, I was just like, I just felt so, there was like this weird, I was like, oh shit, like there's some kind of weird connection. I had,
Really, just through just from an email.
Yeah, it was so weird. I'm telling you, I just think some things are meant to be for sure. So, I started emailing back and I did this project and we just started talking, emailing, then talking online, then texting. It was very like a gradual process, but I'm like that first week. It was like the first week or two that we had been talking. I was like, I'm going to marry this guy. Wow. I just knew. It was weird. And I'm not, I'm not that kind of person who just thinks that kind of thing. I'm not like, I don't have like, I'm a daydreamer, so cool. But I'm not. Yeah. So
it must be weird though, like being like a professional, musician, and you're taking your job seriously, and somebody from another band like emails you to go and do a job. Was it weird transitioning from like, okay, I'm like, this is like a work thing to yeah. like, oh shit, we're texting and it's like getting personal. Like, how was that transition?
It was very chill. I mean, he just, it was just a vocal that they wanted me to sing on this song. So, it was, and also to rat him out a little bit.
I like this. Yeah, rat him out.
Yeah, I'll rat him out. Okay, he had actually had a crush on me for a while, apparently. Didn't know this. I'd never talked to him before. I'd never met him or talked to him. I didn't know this. But so he, obviously through mutual friends, knew that I had been divorced like a while, a while back, a few months prior. And so he was kind of like, putting out the bait. Hey, it worked, 8 years later, his kid. So.
Right. That's a cool story.
He's amazing. He's like, he is just crazy creative. His brain, I don't understand it. He can do all these, I don't know if it has something to do with the fact that he is just, he has this bipolar, but it like, he's very good about, he takes his medication and he gets his sleep and he's very diligent about making sure he's healthy, for us, and it's amazing. So he's great. He's like the perfect man, and he's just, he takes care of us and he loves us and he's always there for us, and I just can't, there's not enough good words to say about him, but he's just so creative, and there's nothing that he can't accomplish if he thinks that I want to accomplish this, which is very encouraging, inspiring for me as an artist to be around, because sure. I've learned a lot. I'm like, whoa, if you think of these things you want to do, you make them happen, you do
just
them.
Do
like,
it. Yeah.
Nothing's impossible, and he's that kind of person, so it's really cool to be around,
that is really, really cool. And I know, like obviously, yeah, there's been a lot of talk about your previous marriage, and I don't want to harp on it because it's so long ago, but I did read you say something like I was married to him, Chad Gilbert from Newfound Glory. I was married to him for 5 minutes. It's like, I believe what you said in something I wrote, which I was kind of like, I thought that was kind of like a cute way of being like downplaying it, but also,
kind
of showing that you've gotten past it. Yeah.
Right. And I did. And it's not like there's any bad blood or anything. I haven't seen them since we were divorced, but it was just a weird thing. We fell into this relationship, and before I knew it, we were like engaged, and he was building we were building a house in Tyler, and it was just so fast, and I don't know. And then before I knew it, it had only been like 9 months, and he was like, I want a divorce. And so I was like, whoa, like, I was 20 something. I was like 21, maybe. I don't know. I was a kid. I was a baby.
Yeah.
And it was just my world was rocked. But, I had, like I said, I had an amazing family and amazing friends, and I don't know. I was really able to turn it around and turn it into something. I poured all my energy into photography and art and drawing, and it was actually like this super beautiful time for me after it happened, and it was devastating as hell.
Right,
I mean,
right.
No one gets through that without any scars, but it was, it was a very important part of my life, and I appreciate it. It was necessary, I think, for it to kind of make me who I am today. you know, it was whatever. It's just life. Life is shitty. Whatever.
Well, I don't know. I mean, life can be shitty, but it's proof that sometimes you need to really, sink down pretty low to be able to pull yourself up even higher than you were, you know? So
you have to have those shitty, dark moments, you know, in your life sometimes. And it's very key to really appreciating what you have.
Absolutely. You write songs. I know you have the project with Max, like Perma. How is it working with Max, like not on the husband level, but like on the music level, like writing songs with him? Because I imagine, the thing is, there's two things. First of all, he's always struck me as a guy that kind of works on his own. Like typically, like, you know, all those Say Anything songs that he wrote over the years, it seems like he kind of did it himself. And I know he played all the guitars on them and everything. But how is it collaborating with him and from a songwriter's perspective?
It's really easy. I mean, he does like work very well alone, and he'll think, oh my gosh, like I have this song idea, and he'll go and write like 5 songs in a day, and I just don't understand how he does it. But he's very easy to work with because he's very open and he loves ideas, and he's not one of those people who's like, no, I have this idea, this is what we're doing, you know. He's very, you know, just open to anything. So it's very actually easy to work with him and to collaborate with him because he has so many ideas himself, and he's obviously, he's like a big fan of my songwriting and what I do. So, you know, I've never had him even say, not feeling that, or I don't like that, which is, you know, I would hope that he's not just being nice, because I don't think he is, because he wouldn't put out anything that he doesn't stand behind 100%. Sure. Like, he's not that kind of person. So
right. It's
actually very easy to work with him. I think he's actually going to probably use, we just worked with Will Yip on this last record, and he loves Will. So he's wanting to have Will do their next record, which would be really cool. Cause I'm excited about that.
No, that's really cool. Was it hard to get Max to move from Los Angeles to Tyler, Texas, or wherever you live?
Oh my gosh. No.
He was stoked? Because that's a big change.
It is. It's huge. But he didn't care. When we first started talking, that was one of the things I kind of up front. I was like, hey, like, I see that we have a thing that's happening. I just want you to know I can't move away from Texas. I want to be here. My family's here. Like, so if you want to actually date me and be serious, like, I'm not messing around. Like, you will have to move here. And he's like, literally, I'm not kidding. Like, a few weeks later, he was here in Tyler. So,
wow.
The man knew what he wanted. He got rid and got it.
Good.
So it was easy. He loves me here. We have this great little community. And so, you know, we travel so much.
Sure.
That when we come home and we have this beautiful, safe little haven, this quiet little town, and my kids' grandparents are here, and it's just fun, and I love it.
That's true. Yeah. Like, I live in downtown Toronto for years and years, and it's like, yeah, I'm like always in a city. Like, I'm on tour, I'm in a city. I'm home, I'm in a city.
Yeah.
Like, I never get that to experience that. Like, oh, yeah, I could just be like chill and I don't have to hear traffic noise. And absolutely.
I think it's good for us. We like it. So.
No, that is rad. And if you want to ask Max if he wants to do my podcast sometime, that would be cool too.
Oh my gosh, he would love to. No,
I think a long time ago
he was like, oh yeah, totally. He's like, that guy's great. Love the band. So I would,
it's been a long time since I talked to Max. And I think I was gonna do one a while ago with both Max and Chris when they were going to do the Two Tongues.
It
was like they were like working on it, and I think I was talking to Equal Vision about it at the time, but I'm sure it'll happen.
That was a crazy, when those two guys were here working, because we have a studio in our...
I was going to ask you, I was like, what's the guitar collection look like in the Dupree Bemis home?
You know what is funny? Max and I are not like gear nerds at all, so we have guitars, but you know, we're not... Like, we don't know much about guitars. It's funny. Like,
that is funny.
It is. It's like very kind of lame, but we're just not, you know, we love to write and we know what sounds that we like, but we're not the kind of people who like know what gear to use to get those sounds. Like, it's so sad.
I'm shocked. Like, I think Max would be like all of like a huge pedal guy or like something like that.
He knows how to get the sounds that he wants because he's like this weird creative genius. But I mean, otherwise we're not like guitar nerds, you know. I mean, I have my Rickenbacker that I bought, you know, whenever we got signed to Warner Brothers, and it's still my favorite guitar. This one I still play like every tour. So yeah. But anyway, it's pretty pathetic, actually. I rely on my bassist, Garen, my cousin, because he is a total gear nerd, so he knows everything.
Yeah, there you go. No, I find, and I'm not going to generalize because someone will, you know, rip me apart for this, but I do find that the best players and the best songwriters are typically not the gear nerds. The gear nerds are typically the people that aren't that good at playing or writing, so they have to have something to know about that's easy to know about, because it's much easier to read about guitar pedals and fuck around with sounds than it is to actually write and play good. But hey,
I guess so. I don't know.
I'm gonna get some heat for that.
Yeah. No, I don't know. That stuff is rocket science to me. Like,
oh, okay. Yeah, it's different.
I mean, the gear stuff, I can't. I don't know. I'm not. We are the guitar. The girl who has been playing guitar with us, Elle. She's amazing. She plays in this band called Poema. And
yeah.
She heard it with her sister, and she is like, she's one of those people though. She can sing amazing. She can write songs. And she just knows her shit with gear. She's like, can play. She's a killer player. So it's just, you know, she's just, I don't know.
It just makes you want to quit music. That's what I, when I'm around people like that, I'm like, oh God.
Like, why am I the front person for a band? I can't even turn my amp on.
Well, that's a bit of a new thing, like taking over all the lead vocal duties, right? Yeah. On the new Isley record, I'm Only Dreaming, which comes out February 17th on Equal Vision Records. You are the prominent vocalist, like on the entire thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's true. I had to take on the extra duties, but so it was challenging, but it's worked out. You know, we live, you know, we're still trying to figure out how to make it all work live, but I think we've pulled it off so far. So it's been, you know, like I said, it's challenging for me because I'm so used to having, you know, bouncing off a vocal to someone else or passing off or, you know, it's very weird place to be in just like all of a sudden, but you know, it's fun as hell. I don't mind it. It's just, you know, learning curve
and more pressure on you, I guess.
More pressure. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, is it hard live when you've played some of those songs like so many times and now all of a sudden it's like, oh, I have to sing like all these other parts. Is that weird?
Yeah. It's just exhausting. I'm like, I never fully appreciated someone who carried all the vocals before until now. You know?
Right. There you go. This is the Lead Singer Syndrome podcast. So we typically do talk about how hard our lives are and how difficult we have it.
Right. You know, poor us.
Poor us. Oh, man. It's just so hard. You work with Will Yip. And did your sisters collaborate on the record at all, or were they like basically, no, we're out of the band, we're not even, or did you kind of still run some ideas past them? Like, how did it work?
No, it was, they had all moved to Nashville and were not involved at all. So it was really just me and Garen, who he actually helped a lot. The singles that we have out now, other than there's one, Louder Than a Lion, I wrote that one by myself, but the other two singles he co-wrote with me.
Yeah,
just the music, he would send me music and he'd be like, I love this music, can you write over it? And so that was really cool and really helpful, and you know, he's a great songwriter. So but otherwise, you know, I just kind of had to get myself in the mindset of just the fact that I had to do the whole project. And you know, it was, you know, with a lot of self-doubt, you know, as a, you know, lead singer trying to having to write out the songs, and like, oh my God, like people are like, all our fans who have loved us for what we have been are now like, it's all hinging on me, like to carry this torch. And I was excited about it, but oh my God, can I do this kind of thing? And so it was scary, but you know, with Will and Garen, they're great. Working with Will is amazing. He's so good at what he does.
Nice. Great.
So, yeah. Oh, my gosh. I want to do the next record with him. That guy's so sick. But
awesome.
Well,
it's great you're already talking about the next record. I love
that. Yeah. Oh, gosh. For sure.
You know, I listened to, I guess, yeah, the two, you have two songs out from the new record that comes out in February, right?
We have three now.
Three. Okay. Yeah. I only heard two of them. But the what struck me about the songs right away is the, I hate using the word mature. Like, I hate using that word, and I hate hearing that word even more than I hate using it. But I'm going to tell you why I really felt like it was mature.
Mm-hmm.
Because I felt like the songwriting and some of the chord progressions and then melodies you were using over the chord progressions were actually quite complex. And I don't know if that's something that you, I know you said that Garen wrote some of the music, but I just kind of wonder if that's something that you tried to expand on, tried to be a little more out there with some of the arrangements and chord progressions, or if that's just something that's kind of come naturally.
Yeah, I don't, like, honestly, I don't know. This is going to sound dumb, but I don't know how I write songs. Like, when I look back after I've written a song, I'm going, whoa, how did I even do that? I don't know. Like, the songs that come out of me that I believe are great songs are the ones that I tried the least hard at, and that just, you know, that I just kind of, like, didn't think about in my brain, just kind of let it happen. And I'm not one of those people who writes constantly either. I know some people are. Max is a songwriter who he writes constantly. He's always writing songs, and I'm not like that. You know, if I know we have a project, you know, we have to work on the next record, I'll, like, hunker down and I'll just go in a closet and write, you know, and really try and get lost in the songwriting. But otherwise, I'm not just, you know, I don't write a lot of songs. It's not. So the ones that we have on the record, that was almost all that I even had written. There was a few more that, you know, we kind of, you know, we threw toss around, but, you know, Will and Garen, we went through and just kind of picked, you know, the best ones. And I don't know, I think Will is super, he was super helpful. I mean, definitely a lot of the kind of the arrangement stuff with the songs, which probably sounds like kind of next level for Isley, was Will's ear, like,
okay,
kind of shifting. Because and I learned a lot from him. It was really cool to work with someone who wasn't, you know, we self-produced the last one. And then before that, we just had all these kind of random big producers at the labels would throw at us. So having someone who was like a peer who was like just super talented, you know, kind of like put some fresh perspective on it. So yeah, I don't know. I we'll see if I actually can do it again, you know, after on the next record.
Oh, but, well, you're going to get better at it. You know,
I hope so. That's all I want.
That's how these things are supposed to work anyways.
Yeah. Yeah. I just want to get better and better, you know, the songwriting. And I just, you know, I want to go to shows and have kids sing these songs, you know, back and see it, you know, in their faces that it's done something for them, it's touched their lives, or it's going to help them. And that's what else. I mean, of course, like, yeah, part of being in a band is just like you're doing it because you just love singing and playing and you just get off to that. But, you know, the other big part is just, it does help these people. Like, they tell you, and you talk to them, you connect with them, and they're like, this got me through this hard time in my life, or I didn't commit suicide because your song came on the radio, whatever, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it's for real, and it's crazy. But it's, so things like that, you're just like, whoa, shit, like, this is, I mean, I love doing this, and it actually is doing something productive in life, you know, it's not just for me, so.
Absolutely. And I can definitely relate to that as well. You know, man, I just can't imagine, like, we're in the middle of, like, you know, we're starting to record like next month or whatever. And I'm sitting here,
oh, cool,
like, I'm having trouble, like, you know, balancing my time. I just can't imagine you saying, oh, I'm in my closet writing songs. Meanwhile, your two girls are like running around the kitchen, and like, maybe your husband's on tour. I don't know. Like, that, I just can't, like, I have so much respect for you being able to do that. And that is incredible. So the new Isley record, February 17th.
Mm-hmm.
Check it out, everybody.
Thank you.
I do love the thing you said about how the songs you think are the best songs are the ones that came easier to you. And yeah. I think that's so funny. And it reminds me of, I was reading an interview a long time ago when I was a kid with Billy Corgan of Smashing Pumpkins, when he said, he was talking about the song Today. And he's like,
like,
I pour like my heart and soul into all this. And all anybody wants to talk to me about is the song that I wrote in 5 minutes. You know?
Yes.
And
I think I've heard that before. I mean, hey, buddy, it's a great song. Sorry.
It's a great song. And it's like almost speaks to like, hey, maybe we need to dumb it down. And like, why are we using all these chords? But then I hear, you know, the Isley song, like the first one you have on your website or whatever, like, you know, that's embedded in there. And I'm just like, no. This is like, has this wall of sound and it has this, this, there's so much going on and it's, you know, so interesting. So I think it's good to have that combination.
Thank you. Yeah. I just do what everyone hopefully is doing and just writing what you want to hear and what you love. You know, I never really try for a certain style or anything other than I'm always just thinking, do I want to hear this melody over and over again? Is this melody unique enough? Is someone actually going to want to like sing this? You know, I'm just a big melody. That's my thing, is melodies.
Melody,
and
yeah.
If I feel like a melody, like to me, the music is way less important. Even the lyrics are not as important. If there's no melody there to like catch your ear and get you like do something to you, then no one's going to want to listen to the lyrics. So,
When you're working on a melody, you know, you're a guitar player, obviously, and you're probably, when you're writing, you're sitting with a guitar or whatever. Mm-hmm. Are you just kind of humming along, like, with chords and then figuring out a melody that way? Or do you, like, record a guitar part and, like, try to put a melody over with an instrument? Or how do you actually do that?
Usually I just kind of, you know, mess around with my guitar. Or, you know, sometimes I'll even just, like, put on a drum loop and sing to that, just having a beat. I always need a rhythm, something, you know, something there to like anchor it. And then, I go from there. And something I found that really helps whenever I'm trying to come up with lyrics is, I don't know, like whenever you're messing with a melody and you catch on to something that you really love, just like making different sounds phonetically that sound pleasing. And really helps me. Yeah. Cause then you're like, wait a minute, that I want to make that phonetic sound with that melody part, so it really helps knock lyrics out of my head. So it's
that's funny.
I probably look like a total idiot. If someone saw me writing a song, they would just be like, what, this girl is like on drugs?
I have some hilarious voice notes I've made, like, on, you know, just on my phone, where I'm just like saying lyrics that don't make sense while playing guitar. Like, some of them when I was younger, like my mom's in the kitchen, like being like, Shay, it's time for dinner. And I'm like singing some song, like it's, you know, absolutely ridiculous. But
yeah, no one wants to hear my, if anyone just got into my phone and got my voice notes, I would be ruined. I just don't want to hear that stuff.
I know. Some of the notes I make to myself, like I'm like, oh, it's in this key, it's in this tuning. Like,
yeah. And then you go back and you're like, wait a minute, what? I can't even remember what that was at all.
I know. That's funny. Me. Well, my favorite too is, and I wanna know if this happens to you. I'll like come up with a riff or an idea or something, and I'll be like, oh, this is so awesome, and I'll like record it so I won't forget it. Then like a week, a month later, I'll listen back and be like, that's a total shit idea. Like, what was I thinking?
Oh, yeah. Of course. No, that's what I'm saying. I have the absolute worst things in voice memo where I'm like, well, I was like, you know, I would wake up because I was like dreaming a melody, and I wake up and you hear me like kind of mumbling something in my phone. And then later, what was I thinking? That sounded good in my dream, but in reality, that's not a good song. But I actually have had some really good like melodies and stuff that I've, you know, that come when you're sleeping and your brain is just kind of untethered. And you know, if I'm lucky, I can get it down. But I always love when that happens. It's really fun.
That's cool. Yeah, no, it doesn't happen to me. I wish it did. Maybe I have to take some weird sleeping medication or something.
I don't know. Yeah,
could help me out. Yeah. Always resort to drugs is what we're trying to say. Listen to that, kids. So I don't want to take up too much more of your time, but I know you're heading out on tour, a headlining tour. When does that start, and who are out with you guys?
We are going out. It's in February. It's February and March, and it's around the time that the record comes out. I think maybe the 15th we head out. But It's with a band called Civilian and a band called Backwards Dancer, who are also I'm big fans of both
cool.
the bands.
Cool, so, that's the best.
Yeah, it'd be really fun, yeah.
That's great. That's great. And, yeah. and you're planning on bringing the kids along again, or what's the plan?
Oh, yeah,
they're coming.
Kids are coming. Max is going to be there watching them and, you know, doing daddy duty while I'm being a rock star. You know?
There you go. Being a rock star. Well, I love it so much. Thank you for taking the time. I know you're busy in your car, in the peace and quiet. Maybe it's good for you. Maybe it's a nice little break.
No, this has been awesome. Yeah, I've got they're in there running around driving Max crazy, I'm sure. I'm kidding. They're so chill. I got so lucky so far with our kids. Like, you know, knock on wood, they're just the chillest, most fun kids to be around. So, you know. They're easy on us.
Perfect. That's great. And thanks again for doing this and say hi to Max for me.
I will. Thank you so much.
All right. You have a great day, Sherry. Thank you.
You too. Thank you.
So there it is, my conversation with Sherry Dupree Bemis of Isley. Such a great chat. I really enjoyed it, especially some of the stuff they're talking at the end about songwriting and all the different techniques. And it must be crazy to be married to such a, you know, genius songwriter and be a songwriter yourself and have that kind of connection over music. And it really, really is a cool thing. Next week, we will be back, this time on Monday. I mostly promise. And if you like the show, please go on iTunes. Please write a review. But the best thing you can do to help the show, other than joining the All Access Club, of course, is just to tell a friend. Tell a friend, tell a couple friends, you know, tell whoever in your life thinks would care about hearing conversations between two lead singers. I'm having a great time with the show. I hope you are too. And I just want to spread the word and make this thing as grand as it can be. Grand is an underused word, I think. I like that word, grand. Anyways, hey, thanks again. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next Monday, presumably. As always, I will leave you with a tune. Isley, their brand new record, I'm Only Dreaming, comes out February 17th, I think. Yes, I think that's what we said. Here is one of their new singles. It's called You Are Mine on Lead Singer Syndrome. Just love it.
Time.
Hey, now this episode's over. You know what? If you're pissed about the fact that this episode wasn't up on Monday morning, first thing, bright and early, you know what? I don't care. You know what? You can shut up. But, or you can not shut up and you can call the Lead Singer Syndrome hate line at 657-666-HATE. Again, that's 657-666-HATE. Leave me a message and yeah, you suck, guy. Bye.